From the magic of the mind to the excellence of eternity, a whole new area of broadcasting excellence.
Willanthropy. What does it mean? What's it all about? Is it another polysyllabic word that's being used to actually bamboozle us? Well, no, actually, it is a big significant aspect because it's all to do with the importance of actually giving and such like. And we're delighted to welcome to explain what exactly willanthropy is, the director of Remember a Charity. That's Lucinda Froslick. How are you, Lucinda?
Thank you, Alex. I'm very well. How are you?
Excellent. I think it's Frostic, not Frostlick. So just get the thing sorted there. Anyway, let us move on to this particular aspect, which is willanthropy. So share with us, what is willanthropy?
Well, willanthropy is a new term that we've coined to really convey that act of giving to charity in your will. I think this is something that, you know, don't get me wrong, this is not a new concept. Giving to charity from your will has been around for a very long time. But in recent years, we've seen a real kind of resurgence, and we're seeing more and more people choosing to do this. The reason we're coining this new term and calling on dictionaries to recognize the term willanthropy is that it conveys that giving to charity from your will is not something that just the wealthy can do, but actually anybody can be a willanthropist. Anybody can choose to lift a gift, large or small, and it really can make a significant difference long into the future.
The key thing there, of course, is significance, because an awful lot of charities, as we know, post-pandemic actually rely heavily on charitable donations, especially the smaller ones. And this is something presumably where, Lucinda, you can actually determine, in addition to the mega charities that we hear a great deal about, that some of the smaller ones that maybe need that extra help can also benefit as well.
Alex, you're so right. As I said, giving to charity has been around for a long time, but I think often it's been the bigger charities who's benefited from gifts in wills. And don't get me wrong, to them, those gifts really are crucial, often funding 30, 40% of their voluntary income on an annual basis. But actually what we're seeing is many smaller charities starting to benefit from gifts in wills. And these can be the smallest community-based organisations through to arts organisations, education organisations, you name it. There's a broad range of charities benefiting from gifts in wills. In fact, around 100 people now choose to leave a gift in their will, and about 10,000 charities benefit from gifts in wills each year. So it really is something to celebrate, that growth, because as you touched on the start of this, I mean, let's face it, it's an incredibly challenging environment for all of us. But for charities, they really do feel the brunt of it, because not only are they having to bear the brunt of increased costs and so on, but they've also got more of us turning to them and asking for help. There's increased demand for services. So more than ever, I mean, those gifts in wills really are crucial in the kind of overall funding landscape, if you like, for charities now.
It's probably also worth noting that if you do make a donation to charity in your will, that amount is actually free of inheritance tax. So again, it's one way, I suppose, of ensuring that all of your particular donation goes to the charity of your choice.
Yeah, giving to charity from your will is actually one of the most effective ways of doing it. So it has a whole host of different benefits, not least the fact that it doesn't really cost you very much right now. But the tax advantages that you just highlighted really are crucial. So when you leave a gift to charity in your will, anything you leave is, of course, free of tax. So that can increase the tax-free threshold on your estate. But there's an added bonus too. If you choose to give 10% or more to good causes, the whole inheritance tax rate is reduced. It's reduced to 36% from 40%. Might not sound like very much of a reduction, but bear in mind the size of estates, particularly where people pass on their wealth in terms of houses and so on to younger generations, actually that difference, that reduced inheritance tax rate really can make a considerable saving. So there are advantages all round, I think, for leaving a gift to charity in your will.
Remember a Charity, of course, a very 21st century charity established originally in 2000, or the year 2000. It's a consortium of charities working to inspire more people to consider leaving a gift to charity in their will. How comfortable are you, or how confident are you, Lucinda, that willanthropy will actually be in the next edition of the Oxford English Dictionary?
I would love to come back on in a year's time and tell you that we've had huge amounts of success. But I think it's going to take some time. And the truth is, these things are chicken and egg. So the more people that are out there talking about willanthropy, the more people that are out there finding out more about how they can be a Willanthropist who can share their stories of Willanthropy. And actually, we've got some lovely stories on our website of all those incredible people who've chosen to pledge a gift in their will, ranging from about £2,000 through to £2 million plus. You know, huge range and huge huge spectrum of people who all want to make their mark and ensure their values and beliefs live on long beyond their lifetime. So, who knows where we're going to be in a year's time, or whether it's going to take even more time than that. But to tell you the truth, getting the conversation out there, encouraging people to think about leaving a gift to charity in their will is really the key thing here. And as a consortium, as you said, of 200 charities who absolutely rely on that legacy income, that's our message. It's be inspired by those wonderful stories of philanthropy. Recognize that this is something that's happening all around us and changing the world around us on a day-to-day basis, and that any of us too, almost any of us too, can choose to leave a gift to charity in our will, no matter what size, large or small, it can make a huge difference.
Remember, charity.org.uk, best place to go to find out further information.
Thank you, Alex. Yes, remember charity.org.uk. And if you want to read more about the philanthropy stories and be inspired by other people who've chosen to leave a gift in their will, /philanthropy. Also, if you're already a wonderful philanthropist and have chosen to leave a gift to charity in your will, why not share your stories on social media with hashtag philanthropy and tagging in Remember a Charity? And we'd love to see your stories come through.
Cinder Frostick, Director of Remember a Charity. Huge thanks and keep on keeping on.
Thank you, Alex.
arcade games, miniature golf, football, bowling, and board games. Those are apparently the top five competitive family activities. But is it more than just our competitive parents that we actually deal with? And how can we actually occupy children during, of course, the vacation area? Now, we're delighted to actually welcome, specifically to address these particular points, the awesomely talented singer extraordinaire. That's Michelle Heaton. How are you, Michelle?
I'm good, thank you. That's a lovely intro.
Well, it's all the way, all the more justified for your fantastic work in the business,
thank
of course.
You.
But in addition to that, of course, you're also a parent. You're a mum of two. I suspect you are. The answer to this is yes, but presumably you are a competitive parent.
I am quite. Yeah, my husband Hugh, daddy, is the most competitive parent, 100%. Yeah, and we are starting summer holidays now, and that always comes with a slight trepidation and anxiety of how to fill each day, you know, with activities other than the kids just being on their screens, which, you know, it serves a purpose when I'm washing and cleaning, but we don't want that all the time. So it's about filling the day's activities. And we really like things like bowling, because it's competitive as well as fun. You know, it's really important to fill things with, you know, affordability, accessibility, things that are fun and immersive and not just those things that last for half an hour. It's definitely one of our favourite sports. We call it a sport because we actually, I suppose, work up a sweat when we're doing it as well, right?
Well, that's true, of course. I mean, with board games being number one in the top competitive family activities list that's been compiled here, that's obviously great when it's the weather's not at its best and you're indoors and it's rainy and so on. But as you said, the kind of fitness aspects of bowling, football, miniature golf and so on probably also help keep you fit and healthy as well.
Yeah, very much so. We're very active as a family, and myself and my husband are really into fitness and creating awareness around our kids on that, you know, but we're not perfect. You know, I don't have them out doing drills every day, not at all. Otherwise that will face more problems than it's worth. But to keep them entertained with activities that they can move with it as well is really important to us.
I see that your nine-year-old son always beats you at golf. Is this a case of...
He is amazing. So my husband used to be plus two, if anybody knows anything about golf. He used to play professionally when he was younger around Florida and South Africa. And my son has taken an eager interest in golf, and he's absolutely amazing. So they do a lot of golf together anyway. I don't do golf at all. It's not my thing, much to my husband's dismay. But we like miniature golf. We like crazy golf as a family. And that's how we get into it there.
And in terms of the overall family, is it a case of it depends on the sport in terms of who's most competitive then?
Just in general, it's got to be Huey. He's one of these annoying people that wins at everything. So he's extremely talented and he does very well at things. And he doesn't like to lose. Neither does AJ. But when it comes to things like board games or manipulative games, it's Faith, actually.
Wow. Manipulative games.
Well, she's 11, babe, going on 21, and she's about to start senior school. So anybody with a girl around that age will understand the level of manipulation they bring to my life.
Wow. It could go into a psychological experience.
Yeah, I could go on a whole different tangent here. Yeah.
I mean, this survey is obviously produced for Hollywood Bowl. You've talked about, obviously, the joy of bowling. Is it something that, in essence, you would say, yeah, I mean, it's obviously, I was surprised to see how high up in the top competitive family activities it actually was. You know, coming in at number two is pretty significant. I mean, is this something to do as well with the American influence? Of course, a lot of American TV shows, etc., have that ubiquitous scene in the bowling alley and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. And growing up, it was Grease, right? You know, whenever Grease was on, especially Grease 2 was all about the bowling and the element of being young and fun at the same time. But also, you know, this has been around for years. Bowling's not new. It's nostalgic. and things that I used to do with my mum and dad. And that's all we're doing, you know, bringing it to our kids now. And the experience of bowling isn't just about the bowling itself. Arcades are there, there's food, there's drinks, there's entertainment there as well. And so there's a bit for everybody. So even if you're not great at bowling like myself, there's other things to keep us entertained.
And what's the feeling like, Michelle, when you actually have a full 10-pin strike and you knock them all down? Do you actually?
Well, last week I took my mum, it was my birthday, and it was her first time bowling in a long, long time. And I managed to get a couple of spares. That's when you get a strike on the second attempt. But my mum was getting actual strikes throughout, and that's because she cheated. So there's an element of cheating here going on. She used the training things at the side, and she used that thing that you put in the middle and you push the ball off that toddlers use. So she totally cheated, and she won.
Wow. Well, I suppose, you know, ends can justify the means, but also is it whatever, in the spirit of a thing?
Whatever. I mean, it was, do you know what was fun is seeing the kids really enjoy themselves with their grandma, and grandma really getting a kick out of it as well. They learn by us, right? The kids take a lead on how we're feeling and enjoying things. If we're doing activities with the kids that's just for the kids and we don't get involved, they can sense that. So it's really good to have an activity that we can all enjoy as a family.
There are, of course, folk who would say it all starts with the shoes, basically. I know that was the line.
Well,
yeah,
and you can wear your own shoes now, so you don't need to wear somebody else's, that the views. You wear your own trainers, so it's win-win.
Absolutely. And hollywoodbowl.co.uk, the place to go to actually pre-book visits and so on?
Yeah, absolutely. You've got it spot on, and also to check out where your nearest bowling centre is.
Well, Michelle, it's been great to chat to you. Yourself. Any plans to get back into the recording studio again in the near future?
No, we've got loads of gigs coming up over the summer and beyond, which is amazing. But as for making new music, I think that hat may have been hung up. But let's see.
Wow. I mean, I don't know. I think there's, you can't allow cream like yourself to actually settle anything other than top of the tree, basically, Michelle. So,
bless you. On that.
For now, though, Michelle Heaton, huge thanks, and keep enjoying your bowling.
Will do. Thank you, Alex.
Every pore, I don't wanna be here no more. Time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
Wonderful, wonderful Copenhagen, friendly old girl of town.
Neath her tavern light on this merry night,
let us clink and drink one down. Wonderful, wonderful Copenhagen, salty old queen of the sea.
Once I sailed away, but I'm home today,
singing Copenhagen, wonderful, wonderful Copenhagen for me.
I sail up the Skagerrak and sail down the Kattegat, through the harbor and up to the quay, and there she stands waiting for me with a welcome so warm and so gay.
Wonderful, wonderful Copenhagen. Wonderful Copenhagen, friendly old girl of the town.
Neath her tavern light on this merry night,
let us drink and drink one down. To wonderful, wonderful Copenhagen, salty old queen of the sea.
Once I sailed away, but I'm home today,
singing Copenhagen, wonderful, wonderful.
Wonderful, wonderful Copenhagen, delivered, of course, on Siren Radio by the fabulous Danny Kaye, much beloved by Richard Fitzwilliams. Not, but at least we can play it now he's not here. Anyway, Richard is in Copenhagen, so on that basis alone, he'll be obviously soaking up the atmosphere of Denmark and lots of other key elements within that. But thankfully, the most important part of obviously the two-hander in terms of film and TV is actually with us. That's Natasha Wanton. How are you, Natasha?
I'm very well, thank you.
And are you are you coping living in the land of cheating Australian cricketers?
This has been such a big debate that's just blown up, and I completely understand why, because we're all obsessed with sport here. But it's quite controversial, and I, from what my understanding of the situation, I'm going to get a lot of people being grumpy with me now. But my understanding of the situation was this was a similar thing that apparently England pulled against New Zealand last year, or in a similar circumstance. And we are, so technically the criticism seems a bit hypocritical, apparently. I'm not a cricket fan. I don't know much about it. That's just from the news reports I've watched. What are your takes on it, Alex?
Well, I mean, you know, England cheating, surely some mistake. We've never done that ever in our entire sporting history. So, you know, clearly there can only be one response on that basis, which is, well, at least the Australian women haven't done that well either at the World Cup, being beaten as well. Unbelievable. It's just all going wrong.
I'm quite surprised how much it's actually taken off here. So for people who know Australia, they'll know that soccer, as it's called out here, is not normally that big. Like, it's a nation of sports lovers, but generally you've got Australian footy, you've got sort of rugby league, that sort of thing. Cricket is usually pretty big, hockey, netball. Soccer is one of those things, or football. Is one of those things that I don't really hear that much about. It's not really, yeah, it's more something that people who migrate here as expats sort of bring and are passionate about in that community rather than Australians. So what's been really nice, I guess, is seeing that the stadiums have been full and seeing that people are actually taking a bit of an interest. It's not top news. It's not cricket level, but it's nice to see it somewhat represented in the media, which was more than I was expecting.
Well, co-hosts New Zealand, of course, much loved by many Australians, are indeed out of the Women's World Cup as well. So it's all challenging. And no doubt you're looking forward to the Rugby Union World Cup, which will be upon us before we realise where we are.
Yes, it's going to be very exciting. My my in-laws are actually in Paris. They're living there currently. And they say this, they talk about all the work that they're doing in cleaning up all the monuments. You know, I was there.
They're banning all the bookstalls. They're banning all the bookstalls from the Seine. Every bookseller, which has been there for four centuries, this particular part of the Seine where you have the booksellers by the banks of the Seine for the Olympics, they've been told, allez, go away. They're not being allowed. There will be no books around for the Olympics in France. How can you cope? I mean, surely Macron's gone mad.
That does sound rather extreme. That I have not heard about. So that is naughty, naughty. Yeah. That was not my understanding. I know that they've been quite ambitious with some of the stuff that they were doing, and I know that not all of what they plan to do has quite worked out. For example, the fencing, I believe, is now going to be open air because certain areas of the palace that they wanted to clean up were not cleaned up to the standard that they wanted them to be. And typical
it's strangely all looking very similar to the situation that we actually had in Britain in 2011, just the year before the 2012 Olympic Games kicked off. We've had obviously the riots in the streets. We've had the irritating French people going crazy on the whole system, all of which we saw manifested even in the streets of Nottingham, not with copycat riots and such like back in 2011.
I remember them very well. My father was still in the fire service at the time, and he was having to go out there and attend just in, you know, because
little
you know,
did he realize he was simply being a pioneer, showing that where Britain starts kicking things off. Of course, we never have riots either in Britain these days either. It's all very nice in the wonderful world in which we exist, in which bankers can actually choose who to actually give accounts to or not, as the case may be. So even allowing for that, you know, clearly it was a case of we already did this in Britain. We did it over a decade ago. So, you know, take that, you French folk. Well, we've managed to successfully alienate the New Zealanders, the Copenhagen citizens. Well, they're having to cope with Richard Fitzwilliams in Copenhagen. It's a wonderful place. And, of course, we've done France. And clearly it needs to be done. Let's see if we can actually knock off Sicily in terms of a place not to visit in current scenarios. Let's talk to Sarah Huntley back from Sicily. Did you manage to escape the flames, the fire, and, of course, the changeover in Germany for that fabulous company, which we gave full plugs to last week, which is Hardjet, I believe.
Despite all of that, I would recommend Sicily as an amazing place to visit. I just like to go back when it's a bit cooler, and possibly not with Hardjet, but there we go. It was absolutely wonderful, beautiful churches, sights, happy, fun people, gelato coming out of your ears, and it was just lovely.
That's a bit painful, isn't it? I mean, what about the semicircular canals and the balance? Have you got ice cream sort of coming out of your ears? That's not going to be healthy at all. I mean, Sarah, what's going on?
Well, no, I'd say that the absolute icing on the cake of the ice cream, the gelato, was that the Tricolore, I think I'm saying that right, who are the equivalent of the Italian Red Arrows, did two displays. Once was the rehearsal with White Smoke on the Saturday before I left in the place that we were staying, and then they did it on the Sunday, and it was just absolutely magnificent and quite moving, very, very moving, actually.
Did the Italian equivalent of the British Red Arrows specifically do that because they realised they had the Huntley Britons in town? Was this the takeover that we thought we needed to have a full send-off for these guys?
Well, I think they did, because the funny thing was we shouldn't have been there on the Sunday, but because it had been another day, they amazingly, that hotel said, yes, we've got, you can stay another day. And hello, Alex. Oh, yeah. And yes, we were there. So it was, and our balcony was the balcony which was being viewed from. So it was quite fantastic. And
just think, Sarah, you can rub your hands with glee, because the amount of carbon that's being put into the atmosphere by those jets is basically causing more global warming, which basically means more fires next year. So hurrah all round, basically.
Oh, I know. Well, I meant to be going to visit my brother on Tuesday in Crete, which was booked a long time ago. But I'm quite philosophical if that gets cancelled by EasyJet or a fire happens and I can't go. But I think I will go if there aren't fires and it's not causing a blockage in Italian hospitals, because people need the tourism. So, you know, I'm only going for 5 days if I get there. But... sorry, I've said hard jet have not worked for me very well this year to date, so you know,
well, maybe it's because they had Greek ownership, you know, that's part and parcel of the whole thing. They've just obviously ramped up the whole thing in a considerable ways. As you can see, Natasha, we've moved away from fires in Nottingham a decade ago to fires in the world as well. Of course, in Australia, you're still in your winter. You've got obviously all the bushfires and things to look forward to coming up in a few months' time.
We've actually been very lucky the last couple of years. So this winter and last winter, well, I say lucky. We've had for New South Wales, the region where Sydney's in, we had, I think it was like 6 record-breaking floods in 1 year. So the amount of rainfall we're actually getting in the country is ridiculous. The only upside of that, apart, obviously, terrible thing, people have lost all their homes and everything, but the only upside is I don't believe the bushfires will be particularly bad this summer. I think it will be like last summer, where we were thankfully quite lucky because the ground was still quite wet. Interestingly enough, though, the sales and trading of dung beetles has gone up exponentially. It's because of all the flooding and all the topsoil that's sort of been washed away, all the torrential rain we've had, particularly in our sort of our New South Wales kind of region, Queensland region, where we do a lot of our farming. They've been employing lots of different beetles, particularly dung beetles, because they move a lot of the soil, and they burrow and they put nutrients back into the soil. And so different scientists have been sort of lending them out en masse to different farmers. It's quite an interesting project going on at the minute.
Well, so. Dung beetles for hire is clearly the next phase forward in terms of making use of the economy and actually continuing to thrive in the 21st century. Who would have thought it? You see, these are the kind of topics we can't really get into when Richard's with us and not swanning it around in Copenhagen. You know, the dung beetle question and other sort of aspects. But this is loosely a movie-themed aspect that we're looking for. And we've already heard from Michelle Heaton from Liberty X talking about how she's a very competitive mum. And indeed, we've heard about Willanthropy. Willanthropy, the whole notion of actually being much more generous in your wills, hence Willanthropy. But let's throw into some movies, etc. And one movie which recently was given pretty much tens all round, apart from myself, who gave it a 9.5, was one of our retro movies that we looked at in a show called Resonance Rewind, and that indeed was The Lego Movie. Have either of you ever seen the 2014 Lego Movie? Natasha, you're nodding. Sir, I suspect probably not.
I haven't, no.
Natasha, why should Sarah check out the fact that everything is awesome and everything is cool when you're part of a team?
It's actually one of those movies that is quite... It is a very beautiful message behind it. So it's following that sort of modern day trend of doing sort of kids movies, but there's sort of a deeper message that parents and adults watching and older children can also kind of get out of it. So the general theme is that not everything has to be for work. You know, you can do things for fun. You can be spontaneous. You can make mistakes. You can go out there and just enjoy life. And that's the general takeaway message.
You can advertise the Lego brands just as Mattel can advertise the Barbie brand. Arguably, no Lego movie, no Barbie.
It's interesting, though, that like you bring up the Lego movie, particularly when the Barbie movie is out, because I've had people draw comparisons between the two quite strongly. A lot of people online have been saying it's sort of Lego Movie Mark 2. So having not actually seen the Barbie movie yet myself, I would be interesting to watch it having seen the Lego movie and look for those comparisons. I can see how, you know, corporate placement, but it makes a good sort of vessel for messages and sort of engaging people, you know, because you're tapping into the childhood and all of that sort of shaboodle. But it'll be interesting to see how close it is.
Well, as long as we have UniKitty maintained throughout as my favourite character, UniKitty is clearly, as I say, the way forward, because no UniKitty, no movie. And that probably is one of the reasons why Barbie just will not be the same, because there's no UniKitty in Barbie. Different franchise.
There is Will Ferrell, though, in both of them.
True. Sarah, a movie you may well have seen that Natasha might, well, I don't know, she may well have seen, but it's something we're actually considering as part of Resonance Rewind, the musicals version, is a little number which actually was done by Rodgers and Hammerstein and featured Shirley Jones, amongst others, and lots of dance routines. It's called Carousel. Back in 1956, two Rodgers and Hammerstein movies were released. One did exceptionally well in the box office. One was a disaster. The exceptionally good one was South Pacific, was The King and I should say. And the more challenging one, though it was critically well received, was indeed Carousel, the tale of Billy Bigelow, who's allowed one day to come back to Earth to actually finish any unfinished businesses. It's got elements really of the likes of It's a Wonderful Life, insofar as you've got, again, no Clarence the Angel, but you do have other aspects coming into that. It's got You'll Never Walk Alone. It's got June Is Busting Out All Over, a song I originally thought was written for the birth of Sarah Huntley on the planet. But you've got all sorts of other areas that are interconnected within that, which I have to say, initially, after having hated this movie for many years, I finally realised it's pretty good and would give it an 8 out of 10. Natasha, have you ever seen Carousel?
No, I haven't seen Carousel, but you've done such a good talk up now. I'm swayed to watch.
Sarah Huntley, you surely must have seen Carousel.
When the children are asleep and lights are low. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful musical. And I think you're so right, Alex. It's got lots and lots of messages in it that all sorts of things. Well, get on and live life. I think that's one of the messages. Yeah, I think it's quite magical, Carousel.
And the moral of the story, of course, never actually try to climb up a set of boxes whilst you've actually got a knife in your waistband. It can only end in tears.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, I think, I was just going to say to you too, I went to see something wonderful, but it wasn't a film this week. I went to see As You Like It at Stratford-upon-Avon with a cast that were all over 70. It was quite amazing. And it was just, I was particularly interested because a lot of the actors had trained at the same drama school as me, in a drama centre. But they wrote for it at the end, one of the actors had written an epilogue, but they did it all as if all the characters were in the rehearsal room looking back at when they did it. And what I didn't realise till we got there was that actually most of those actors were in an original production of As You Like It 30 years ago. So it was interesting and very moving and just quite wonderful. And when they, if you know the story of As You Like It, when they actually go into the forest, right at the end, the forest is revealed. I think it's revealed earlier on, and it's magical. And that's a sort of...
Shakespeare does gender swapping.
Yes, yeah. Oh, Shakespeare's doing... Well, he gender swapped the whole time. But Geraldine James, Oliver Cotton, and I think the thing that was so inspiring was this cast. So some people are well into their 70s, early 80s, and they had coped with the fact that people might be off. So Oliver Cotton has had a mini stroke, so he wasn't doing the matinee, but he was coming back to do the evening performance. Somebody else had been in hospital with problem with their ankle, which was back on, and so it's very fluid. There's lots of studies coming backwards and forwards, but it works and people go on. And I just loved it so much because you can still flirt, you can still be in love up until the day you're not here. I think it proved that message. So it was so worth going to see, and I think all of them did a terrific job. And that, strangely enough, what was funny is it brought its own humour, because when I know Angie like it very well, because I play Phoebe, so I'm probably boring everybody because I know the plot inside out. But there are several lines where somebody of 75 is saying, "Well, young man," for somebody else, which actually added quite a lot of humour to it, especially when the other young man, or well young man, was sort of 80 to 75. Mm. But it was
Sarah, in the immortal words of Jerry Halliwell, when she invited Nelson Mandela to put his arm around her, "You're only as young as the girl you feel, and I'm 25, so there we are." Ha 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 ha. One of Nelson Mandela's finest moments, I feel.
Well, yes, exactly. And Geraldine James, right at the end, who's playing Rosalind, comes on, and she looked ageless. Actually looked ageless because she'd got the traditional outfit on. But I'm afraid what the saying of the week for me is, when I was shopping in the shop afterwards, but we are such stuff
as dreams are made of, and our little life is rounded with a sleep.
Exactly. And I just think that we'll carry with us, really.
The cloud-capped towers, all that we shall inherit, shall dissolve, and our little lives fade, and so it goes. But it's The Tempest, in case you're wondering, Natasha. The Tempest, the Shakespearean play, which actually led to Forbidden Planet and indeed the Star Trek television series, Direct Line.
Oh, Alex, wonderful. You linked that there. That was a perfect link. But I do wonderful speech.
Well, we do have one question that emerges from a recent location report that Kathy and myself did in the wonderful world of Horncastle. That's Horncastle, Lincolnshire, home of the Joseph Banks Museum. And it actually ties in with Richard's fondness for, indeed, the Mutiny on the Bounty scenario. Sadly, I can't ask the question now, but I have actually made a note of it, and I will actually ask the question to Richard, which comes, as I say, from the Joseph Banks Museum. And it'd be very interesting to see whether his response is a yes or a no. It's a little teaser, it's a little trailer. Natasha, any other sort of things that you'd like to raise? I mean, we obviously must go and see Carousel or download that. Lego Movie, well, we reciprocated that. Anything else that you think, well, it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles time. Surely, that's got to be a movie we've all got to rush and see again.
There's been so many, hasn't there? I think in terms of the comment, though, of there being so many, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it, if either of you have had a chance to catch it, but I'd love to hear your opinions on what you think about the new Willy Wonka movie and how you
With
think
Hugh they're Grant. Going to the Hugh Grant that. Portraying a person of restricted height to the huge irritation of many people of restricted height who say, "What are you doing, Hugh? Taking our work away from us through computer generation things." I mean, Sarah, Hugh Grant as an Oompa Loompa, I mean, it's just Roald Dahl would be not happy.
No, I suppose not. But I was reading an Grant had an interview that had been written, and he was saying that he is so enjoying himself now playing the parts he's playing rather than playing the romantic leads and heartthrob and the, you know, chat-up guy, smooth guy. He's getting, and he doesn't have to worry about how he looks. And I think he's still rather sexy, whatever he does. But actually, I don't know. I'm sorry, I'm probably really going to put my foot in it with you and Natasha, but I just think if everything was open, we wouldn't have that problem to start with, would we? If it wasn't like that. I've spent my life being told when I left drama school, well, the trouble is you're not Northern, and there was a vogue for Northern actors, and being...
Why, pet, you can bring in a Northern accent anytime you want. How are you, lass? Let's go.
Oh, well, you're too middle class and stuck up, which I am middle class, but I'm not stuck up. I didn't get much work. Then it's not, you know, had I started my acting career 10, 15 years before that, Graham will tell you, I would have constantly worked. And I just think it's a bit of a shame that everyone's cast to type, because people can do, that's what acting's about, becoming different people. So is it, I put the question to you then, yes, perhaps they should have used somebody of has height issues, or could you say that if you put Hugh Grant into it, it would sell the film? I don't know.
Or is he just as we discussed last week with respect to Oppenheimer. Well, I say discussed, I threw it out there as a little hand grenade, which Sarah didn't raise to at all, basically. Why did we actually have two Gentile actors playing two Jewish characters in the case of Albert Einstein and Oppenheimer? And I thought, Sarah, you ignored that question very effectively, very, very positively.
You know how proud of my Jewish heritage I am, but I really mean what I most of the people I know who are Jewish would say the same. If they play it well, if they play it with the right style, then...
I mean, yes. Leonard Nimoy was not a Vulcan. He was Jewish, but he still could play a Vulcan in Star Trek, could he not?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Because we couldn't find any real Vulcans around. That's no excuse. Natasha, any thoughts on this in terms of the obsession that it would seem people actually have to say, I'm sorry, you're not the right person for that role. You know, you can't portray Nelson Mandela because you're Anthony Hopkins.
You see, to some extent, I think this is all a bit... My perfect example of this would be Eddie Redmayne. When Eddie Redmayne played the transgender role, he's later come out and he's apologized for it. And a lot of people will still be saying, well, yeah, he should apologize for it. But I think he portrayed it very beautifully and very sensitively. And he did it with sympathy to the character that he was trying to portray. And I think that that's all you can hope for as an actor. You know, as an actor, you're acting. You're never going to be Henry VIII or Cleopatra or whoever you're putting yourself out to be. You can only, you know, be sympathetic to mimicking as they were. So I think to some extent, it's kind of silly, all this kind of political correctness that's surrounding it. Okay, I understand why some people would be frustrated if, you know, as you say, if you had Anthony Hopkins playing Nelson Mandela, there might be some people who raise eyebrows, right? But from a historical accuracy, racial point of view, people are like,
I mean, Al Jolson could never have ever actually done the jazz singer, nor indeed could Neil Diamond have actually done the jazz singer either.
I can see why people would have more issue with that than they would, this whole people being Jewish or people being gay and playing straight people or straight people playing gay people. And
I'd love to play Vladimir Putin. Sadly, it's not going to happen. Polish connection is too strong. They're not going to accept me as a Russian oligarch.
That'd be a wonderfully interesting series, Alex. I would watch that. I would spam that on Netflix.
Have a show.
I would demand that you get a BAFTA for it. But no, I think that it's...
Actually, Natasha...
I think that to some extent it's silly, all of that. Do you know what I mean?
So, Alex, how would you feel? I think it's when it comes close to something you're related to. So I think that's where... Well, I totally agree with everything that Natasha and you said. So, Alex, if we went to you and if you saw someone portray a Polish background in the wrong way, would you be irritated if that actor wasn't Polish?
Not really. I mean, I think you have to take each cause on a meritocracy. And I think if it happens to be in the decision of the casting director, and we know, Sarah, because we talked about this, there was one standard theme which over the last 40 years of doing these shows has always cropped up in one way, shape or form. And that is the unimaginativeness of casting directors. That they, you go into a casting and you basically say, no, I'm sorry, you're not the person I'm looking for. And you don't even have a chance to even open your mouth because literally they have such a narrow frame in mind. So I think that's an issue that does need to be addressed. And you do need to widen the opportunity there. But surely this actually further narrows that unimaginativeness down because you're not even giving a chance for an actor to emote, to connect with anybody on that basis alone. The notion of what you've just seen with As You Like It being featuring chronologically gifted people would have been laughed out of court, you know, quite literally, in the way that and probably again would be problematic.
Argue, why did everybody have to be over 70 to be in it? But I did think it made a point that the words still stood, and what As You Like It is all about is love and finding love, and that's. Love and finding love is for all your life. It's for all the time. So that was a very important message. But I just was thinking, you better have a sense of humour, the fact that the director obviously factored in that give a run of 2 months, and most people being between 75 and 80, there was going to be a very strong possibility.
You might not make it to the end.
Yes, but people came back, even when there was a problem. And that was very inspiring, particularly with the epilogue that was written at the end, which wasn't Shakespeare, but was written in iambic pentameter in a Shakespeare style, that Geraldine James said so wonderfully. I suppose it was particularly poignant with me because I think about age more now. I'm the age I am. And, oh, how long have I got? And how am I looked at? And what am I looked at as anymore? And I think
it contributed to the Midweek Drive morning edition, Sarah, quite clearly.
But I do think it's such a complex question. And is it? And
look
I
at said Richard Fitzwilliams, 156, and he's still actually doing the business. So, you know, this is what we need to look to, you know. And if he's listening to this, I'm sure he'll take that on board.
Yeah. But is it that one day, actually, what somebody's going to say is, oh, I know, let's do The Importance of Being Earnest as it would have originally been cast, and think that's unique. I mean, perhaps that's what it's going to be. I find the whole thing very irritating, quite honestly, because whenever I'm directing on something for Lambda, I have to be so fluid about it that it sometimes takes the actual storyline out of it. I mean, if you're doing a Greek tragedy, you didn't kill people, but you're acting someone. You know, I think the other thing that I find very interesting is when somebody has a handicap which is obviously visual, then and they act something. I'm really pleased when they've got the job and they're doing that. I think that's very important. But then, do you take it to the extremes of then where does it stop? Is it somebody that's not as tall as some people are? I don't know. It's a very tricky question.
Indeed. And it's brought us neatly round from moving away from the fires of the world through the global warming scenario through to the Lego movie. Everything is awesome. Through to, of course, the wondrousness of Carousel. Sarah, is there a favourite Carousel number you'd like us to feature into this? As I mean, we had Danny Kaye in Copenhagen earlier. What would you like for our outro from? I mean, is it going to be You'll Never Walk Alone? Is it going to be If I Loved You, da 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 da, or are we going for other lines?
I think it has to be If I Loved You. I think that's a wonderful, wonderful song, If I Loved You. Could we have that?
Gordon McRae, take it away.
Lost you.